You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Tuesday. Let me read you some headlines. All right. Marines plan to retool to meet China threat. That's out of the Wall Street Journal. All right. From Stars and Stripes, Marines to reduce force by 12,000, decrease artillery units, and get rid of tanks in 10 years. And I could read different variations of those for the next hour, right? U.S. Marines want to dump all tanks in 10 years. New Marine Corps cuts will slash all tanks, many heavy weapons, as focus shifts to lighter littoral force. So, Jeff Kenny, Tim Lynch going to join me here in a few minutes, and we'll kind of what I wanted to do is to kind of frame how do you look at this, right? How does this make sense, right? And so at the core of this is a discussion that has yet to take place in public, from everything I've seen, about a plan that changes the Marine Corps at its core. And the Marine Corps' value to the nation has been as the best Swiss Army knife, you know, any nation on the planet has. Go anywhere, every climb in place, like the song says, and do anything, right? So heavy enough to fight heavy, if we need to, and be mechanized with tanks and armor, could be a part of that. Can shed all that, task organize, and be a light organization, right? And every role in between. And that's been the Marine Corps' great utility to the nation. So they're going to join me. We'll talk about how to frame this, things that we don't know, you know, footnotes we're looking for, things like that. So good morning on Tuesday, the 24th day of March here in a very, very interesting year, 2020. So General Berger, you know, has announced this, but not too many details. These are the first concrete details that have been released. So we'll have a discussion about that. So without further ado, the United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. dedicated to the thought that that now a pretty interesting discussion is going to take place in Congress that will scrutinize the plan, because the Marine Corps is owned by the American people, and it'll hopefully get the scrutiny that it needs. Is this the best move for the United States Marine Corps? So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that. You know, the French thought they had solved it when they built the Maginot Line, right? The argument was that war has been transformed, and we need tools, right, to counter that transformation, right? Additionally, the Marine Corps saw in the early 20th century the need to get involved in amphibious warfare, and that the evolution of warfare has going to have new requirements. So the question is, where does this land on that spectrum? So here's to the idea that, you know, that we can have a good articulate discussion about that.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
When the danger is perceptible and the cost of acting are low, the failure to act guarantees that the threat will grow and the ultimate cost will be higher. Every day that goes by makes North Korea a more dangerous country. You don't like their behavior today? What do you think it'll be when they have nuclear weapons that can be delivered to American cities? Do you want to wait till then to act, or do you want to act now?
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, a little check of marine weather. Currently, it is partly sunny and 50 in Quantico, so warmed up a little bit on the east coast. Cloudy and 58 down the coast at Camp Lejeune. In 29 Palms, sunny and 49. Pendleton, partly sunny and 50. Camp Smith in Hawaii, partly sunny. No, I'm sorry. Dark, cloudy, and 68, so warmed up in Hawaii. Okinawa, about the same. Clear, dark, and 62. Lashkar Gah, dark, cloudy, and 62. And in Ramadi, late in the afternoon, just before the sun falls, it is partly sunny and 72. Currently at the home of All Marine Radio, it is mostly cloudy and 55. Looking for a high of 64 today, 62 tomorrow, and 60 with lots of wind on Thursday. That is a look at your weather here on a Tuesday. Don't touch that dial. Coming up next is Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny right here on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
So yesterday, I started getting hate mail relatively early in the morning, and it has to do with an article in Marine Corps Times written by Sean Snow about all the tanks in the Marine Corps going away, most of the tubed artillery going away. And I wanted to have Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny on and just kind of give our initial thoughts to what we've read. And so joining me from San Clemente, California is Jeff Kenny. Jeff, what's going on?
Well, not much. I'm self-quarantined here in North South San Clemente and ready to talk.
Oh, boy. And if you got to self-quarantine, San Clemente is not a bad place. Lynch, self-quarantining in McAllen, Texas. Congratulations on that one, Timmy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is a great place to write out the apocalypse.
You know what? You know what? It is, right? Who's going to think to target McAllen, Texas?
That's exactly right. Right off the beaten path.
Never. Wow, that's interesting. All right. Yesterday, a Marine Corps Combat Developmental Command media release that was kind of written about over the weekend or late last week by the Wall Street Journal. But because I don't pay $280 a year to get the Wall Street Journal, I couldn't read it. So read it yesterday and read a whole bunch of emails from a lot of pissed off people. So I wanted to have you guys on and talk about this stuff. So let's talk about it. First thing I want to ask is, what is the genesis of, where does this come from, Jeff? Where does this come from?
I read it and I was, alarmed myself because of the loss of so many resources, but I assume that it comes from the National Defense Strategy, which you told me was, and which we all know is classified. So, it's like what, it's a piece of a whole. It's kind of like that Rudyard Kipling, this feels like a snake. Oh, this feels like a horn. Oh, this feels like a, it's an elephant that a blind man is feeling, trying to see what it is. And so all we know is what the Marine Corps has said. And as far as I know, the other services really haven't come out with anything, but I would just ask, how does this fit into the National Defense Strategy, as articulated by the National Command Authority?
All right. Timmy, anything to add? I mean, that's pretty, it's pretty basic where this is General Berger's understanding of what the National Defense Strategy requires of the Marine Corps.
Yeah. And we have to assume that that is what's going on here. And it's not General Berger had a bright idea and he thought he could just force it down on from the top down onto the Marine Corps. He's responding to some requirements. The fact that this whole strategy is even classified, I think, is problematic because we classify way too much because we don't know what's driving this radical change, and it's not comfortable. People don't like change as it is. And when you don't understand the need for change, it's uncomfortable. Even when you understand it, it's a pain in the ass, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about
the fact that it's classified.
Go ahead.
I mean, is also the National Defense Strategy part, the large part of it, the majority of it, should not be classified because it's a diplomatic tool. It could be a deterrent. It could, I just wonder about it. It just seems perplexing to me the way this is coming out. It's not like a piece of, a more general, news flash we got earlier. You know what I mean?
Did you just use the word perplexing?
Yes, perplexing. Means, I don't know what the fuck's going on. I oftentimes am perplexed in this life of mine.
I more often hear it as, I don't know what the fuck you mean. I don't normally hear it. Geez, Mac, I'm perplexed by what you just said. That's not normally something I hear. Anyway, hence.
On my ass when it comes to what you mean. Yeah.
Exactly. Hence my own confusion right there. So let's talk about the Marine Corps' value to the nation historically, right? We're the Swiss Army knife, yes, Timmy? We've been the best Swiss Army knife, go anywhere, every climb in place, do anything, can go there heavy if we need to. I mean, as heavy as we can be, can go there light when we need to be, task organized to go everywhere in the whole concept of the MAGTAF. Talk to us about a little bit of history and our utility to the nation.
Yeah, and it starts back in World War I when the Marine Corps infantry performed pretty damn well, much better than they thought. Prior to that, we were a branch of the Navy. The naval force's ability to project power is sore, and we actually had things organized called shore defense battalions. We used to have those things. But after World War II, directly after World War II, we had a bunch of big ideas and we're reorganizing everything. Then Korea happened. And after Korea and Vietnam, The Marine Corps evolved to be the nation's 911 force, in which it was agreed that they would maintain all their combat service support, their combat support, all within the active structure with a mirror image reserve division, and be able to deploy first with everything, whereas the Army had intentionally put a lot of its combat service support in reserves in the theory that they could not be tricked, you know, not get screwed over by the president and forced to fight another Vietnam, a 10-year Vietnam. Obviously, that didn't work out for us, that whole thing. But that's what it was supposed to be. We were supposed to be the nation's 911 force. We demonstrated our utility in Grenada. We did it in Panama, where side-by-side comparisons left the other services, quite frankly, looking not that good. I don't mean to brag, but we can on those two evolutions. So we've demonstrated time and time again that the wisdom of being that general purpose force, because the one thing we can anticipate is where we'll fight next is where we least anticipate fighting next. That seems to be the way these go.
Yeah, absolutely right. That's a very good thumbnail description of both the World War One stuff. But these guys are. Combat experience was, you know, involved basically in doing counterinsurgency type operations, and these guys turned around on a dime to become assault battalions in a World War One trench warfare type thing. And the only thing that set them apart from the Army was the EGA. They were wearing Army uniforms with EGAs affixed to them. Otherwise, they're Army uniform. And Timmy's exactly right. All the way through, all the way up to. And then the ideas the Marine Corps came up with to deal with a lack of funding, the MU concept, you know, that was matured under General Gray, but had already been proven even before there were MUs in Grenada and so forth. It was just, you know, it's just been something that it's like, if you really want something that works, it's like things that work get shit canned first. You know? It's like they're looking at getting rid of some of these great things the Marine Corps does, you know, great capabilities we have. There's been no, you know, defeat or failure of you know, military operations that's pointed to it. It just seems to be happening.
All right, Jeff, I want you to make a point about, we talked about just, I think we all can understand the Commandant's desire to, or the nation's need to have somebody that can be forward deployed, right, that can already be in the vicinity. And so you can see the need to have 3MEF tilted to the South China Sea.
Right.
So I want you to talk about 3MEF's AO. And I guess the question is, does the whole Marine Corps need to be tilted to the South China Sea?
I mean, that's the I hate to use this word again, perplexing thing about it. You know, the world's bigger than just what's going on in the South China Sea. And, I mean, 3MEF's AO is bigger than just that. I mean, the first thing that jumps out at you is the Korean Peninsula. If that thing goes, the type of stuff we're talking about being ready for in the South China Sea is just not going to answer the mail there. And, you know, and so you wonder what intellectual rigor was put to this. How is it done? I know in other things that we've done, big changes in the Marine Corps, there's always been something that's floated out to the force, and you get a lot of smart guys, you know, with input. This one just seems to be like, hey, this is what we're doing, and that's all there is to it. And you wonder, you know, why can't we at least see the back and forth? Was there any back and forth? You know, how did this happen? The idea that that the whole Marine Corps focus is going to be on defense of, you know, the South China Sea seems imprudent. And I can't believe General Berger and the other guys up there running wouldn't. That's the first thing that jumps out at you. There's more to the world. There's more to the Marine Corps responsibilities than just the South China Sea. And to think that just because we think, based on, you know, our major competitors, you know, peer competitor is China, that that's necessarily going to be where the next conflict's going to be, is just not backed up by historical example.
And you think of, you know, the difference between the South China Sea and the Korean Peninsula. You think about the Korean Peninsula then relative to Iran, or if we ever fought in, God forbid, Iraq or Afghanistan again, a very different there. or if we fought in Africa or Europe. And so to me, that's to me one of the head scratchers is this. It seems like, you know, we now have the solution, and we're right. going to go from being the best Swiss Army knife, and we're going to pull the nail clippers off. We're going to pull the scissors off.
Right.
We're going to pull the little bullshit magnifying glass off, which I never even used. Right. We're going to pull like three of the blades and the corkscrew, and then we're going to say, okay, here's your blade. Use it everywhere you go.
Right.
And then somebody's going to say, whose fucking stupid idea is this? So anyway, yeah. So to me, there's this, the value of the Marine Corps historically has been this generalist, right? And again, so the question is, how does this lay down? And so that leads me into the next point. And to me, I'll kick this to you. Has the nature of war changed so substantially that the Marine Corps would give up so many offensive capabilities and so many resources? Has the nature of war, because when I think back to the reading that I've done, every time somebody thinks that, it doesn't go well, and you don't. I'm still Jeff's Thunder here, but right. But all you have to do is look at the Maginot Line, right?
All right.
The French had it figured out.
And so we've been through this before. This is not new either. After World War II, the air power enthusiasts, actually before World War II, they thought that you really didn't need an army anymore. You don't need to send the boys overseas. We'll do it all with the airplanes. Then we got with the atomic bombs. They said, we don't need to have infantry. We've got atomic weapons. Nobody will ever fool with us. We've got the atomic weapons. And we modified our infantry accordingly and got our asses kicked in Korea by a bunch of peasants from China, you know. And it seems to me that China, no matter what we say about, I don't know what kind of wargaming we're doing here, what they're giving attributes for Chinese, but the Chinese are still a gigantic army that's based out of conscript infantry. And if they maneuver our asses onto the Korean Peninsula, we're going to need every stinking tube of artillery and tank round we can find. I mean, there's just no way around that. And that's not – it doesn't take a high level of expertise.
Wait a minute. What? GPS, drones, is this just the evolution of war, artificial intelligence thrown in there, right?
It didn't help us against the Afghans.
For every drone we got two lawyers. And they'd be telling us, you know, hey, you can't drone these fuckers because not every one of them has a rifle. You know what I mean? I mean, we've tied our own hands with a lot of stuff. But the biggest one is self-delusion over not seeing the shit that Timmy's talking about. You know,
so my question is this evolution of war or transformation of war, and General Berger's adjusting to the transformation that the rest of you fucking rubes can't see? Right? Because it's not like in front of you with Crayolas, right?
Yeah.
What would you say after you said, fuck off, Matt?
I'd say, prove me wrong. I mean, I'm waiting to hear it. I want to hear it.
Yeah, it didn't seem to help us out with the Afghans or the Iraqi and ISIS guys, quite frankly. It didn't seem that the only thing that really worked against them was getting boots on the ground and kicking their asses. I mean, that worked fine. Everybody understood that. So I don't.
So are you telling me? Are you telling me that we may be going down the road the well-worn path of Robert McNamara, and right, and his data-driven solution to the problem in Vietnam, and
Robert McNamara and his son Donald Rumsfeld.
And exactly, that's where I go. And Don Rumsfeld saying we don't need large infantry formations. We don't need to be there. We're going to have special operators zooming around and whacking people, and that's going to make everybody stay in their houses, and they're all going to do what we say.
Yeah, I got a picture on my bureau here of a burning Humvee that Lori kept. That's I show that to these guys. That's what your fucking technology vice ground pounders get you.
And I don't think the next war we're going to find it any different than this time. You're going to find another Lieutenant Colonel Jeff Kenny laying in the hospital bed, listening to every Marine random saying to the Commandant, hey, we need more guys. We need more guys. That was the story in Vietnam when the old man would talk about a raggedy ass battalion numbering 150, 175 guys, maybe at the end of the 6 month rotation. That was the story in Korea when they were throwing guys in without even sending them to boot camp. That was the story in fucking Iraq. It was the story in Afghanistan.
So
how is that story changing in the future?
So yes. What you're telling me is if that story is evolution, not transformation, as you, Rube, see it, then us moving away from the Swiss Army knife model is not a good thing.
Right.
Okay.
Hedge your bets because we're just kind of framing
a discussion that's going to take place on All Marine Radio over the course of, I don't know, the next couple of years as this thing, you know, goes down the rails.
I think you said it though, Mac. Is the commandant just being told? Is he being said, here's your lane. It's pretty narrow. Deal with it. Because, like I said, it all depends on what's the national strategy. If this is how we fit, you know, then that's it. But I mean, some of the things though seem like you could carve out a little bit of flexibility in the reserves.
Well, let's talk about that. So the 4th Marine Division is another division, right?
Yes.
All right. Just so everybody knows. The other branches of the United States military don't do that. They have different capabilities that they park in the reserves, you know, that they may need, and then they yank it out of the reserve. They activate it when they need it, and they bring it on. They don't need it all the time, you know. So why wouldn't we park a couple of battalions of tanks and all that tubed artillery in the reserves,
right?
It's, you know, because we're giving up a lot of capabilities, and to include, right, a regiment worth of shooters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable. A regiment worth of shooters we're going to give up, right? And so if warfare is not transformed, right, and it's just evolving, why do you think we haven't moved some of this stuff into the, you know, is this stuff – I mean, the Russians don't think artillery's, you know, tubed artillery is passe.
No kidding. Yeah. Exactly, they don't. And neither the Syrians, you know. So it's like, I just don't get it. I just don't get it.
Hey, didn't our artillery, our Red Leggers, aren't they like the most prolific killers of ISIS over the last couple of years? Talk about using your tube artillery. I mean, we've been using the shit out of it over there.
No, it's not.
Yeah, they're sending in guys they're sending folks from the MEU into Saudi Arabia to deal with the Yemen thing. Also,
oh, you mean our tube guys?
Our tube guys.
Yeah, from 2nd Marine Division, right? I mean, they were melting tubes. But let me tell you the problem with HIMARS, right? So HIMARS versus aviation platform to shoot as shooters, right? As soon as it moves, right, HIMARS has to do this adjustment, right?
Right, right.
And it's not quick. Now, my experience is in Afghanistan where we had to clear airspace and things like that. And,
right, right.
And max ord is like 40,000 feet. So, you know, you had to call, you know, Doha and, you know, and all that bullshit. Okay, assuming in a war with the Chinese, you would not have to do that. I don't know how quick that HIMARS makes adjustments like that, right? I know how quick tubed artillery does. Pretty fucking quick. But yeah. I will tell you that because of the length of time it took to make those adjustments, you wouldn't shoot HIMARS against a dynamic target. Because time of flight's too high, and the thing moves, and you don't have any impact on the target. And right. So I don't understand in terms of the I'd be curious to hear the explanation of why, right, why this is – why some of these capabilities are not going to – you know, the bridging stuff. Like, is the Army going to give us a bridge? And what happens when we don't have a bridge?
Right.
We're all going to levitate across the, you know, across – what was that fucking thing coming back from the Chosen Reservoir?
Oh, the Funinchilin Pass.
Exactly.
Right. That was a Partridge, Lieutenant Colonel Partridge, hero of 1st MARDIV. Never made colonel. He said he fixed the airstrips up. He fucking did Funinchilin Pass. He blew up everything that we couldn't fucking carry out.
He fought in half the battles in the Pacific of World War II, and he's not a loser.
He's up there pressing O'Banion for fucking – being, you know, he was peaked out at fucking Lieutenant Colonel.
Yeah, I just don't think that guy has what it takes to be a senator in the Marine Corps.
Yeah, right.
Oh, shit. Okay, so the reserves. we don't understand why some of this stuff is not parked. Because, look, okay, so how about this? Okay, so if we need tanks, where are we going to get them? The Army's going to give them to us?
Yeah. No, that's you know better. You know better.
Yeah.
No. No. When we needed tanks that we didn't have, we've stolen from the Army. And I've heard of that, but never asking for it. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Fucking tank, man, comes in handy.
especially when you fucking need one, man.
An AV. The AV is another thing they're looking at. Drop it, cut it in half, you know?
Yeah.
We need those fucking things.
Hey, you know, in Grenada, you had the SEALs were in Sir Paul Scoins. He was the British magistrate there. They were calling for help. They said they were trapped and blah, blah, blah. And the way that they got the SEALs and Sir Paul Scoins out was they landed some tracks. And as soon as the Grenadians heard the tracks coming at them, they ran. I mean, obviously that doesn't work everywhere, but there's some utility in having big, huge armored damn things. You know,
the track in the water makes no noise. On land, it's like an insane fucking elephant.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, no, it scares the hell out of them.
So footnotes required from that. All right, let's talk about concerns. Let me give you my number one concern about all this. And my number one concern is, and I go back to, you know, when we were captains and lieutenants at the basic school in IRC, and that was when General Gray kind of rolled out maneuver warfare. Right. I mean, you couldn't go anywhere without a pretty heated discussion about, you know, about which camp you were in. Were you an attritionist, or were you going to come out of the closet and were you going to say, I'm a maneuver warfare guy? Right. Yeah. And so, I mean, It was a very, very widely discussed, and this is the most I've seen written about this. This thing, you know, when the Commandant first announced it last summer, I mean, has been widely, people have been waiting on this. And right. Even the discussions, I mean, it's not like this thing came with footnotes. So to me, I guess my first concern is that I haven't it seems like it's been done in a pretty small group, and it hasn't been, you know, debated widely in the Marine Corps. And your guys' thoughts on that?
Like, why didn't they ask? I mean, did they ask General Van Riper? Did they ask General Zinni? They asked General Smith. Those fucking guys are still alive and kicking. Who better than them to ask? Or General Mattis, for that matter?
Yeah. You know, and there's something else too, which was the ownership of that maneuver warfare stuff. Well, in the 80s, you couldn't go anywhere without us talking about it, but the boys talked about it too. You know, you could see that it was that corporals and sergeants were interested in what exactly this meant to them, and they spent a lot of time reading and trying to figure out what the hell this was all about. Right now, we know nothing of these changes being made in the Marine Corps by a commandant. We got to assume that he's got our best intentions at heart. But what the hell? In the absence of any type of discussion whatsoever, you get the rumor mill going, and that's never good. And now we're going to try to bullshit the troops. Hey, we got all figured
You're
out, boys.
Right,
no, I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
That's exactly right. The rumor mill starts when there's a lack of fucking word about, you know, when you're not open, when you can be, then the rumor mill starts, and that's bad.
We have a very, you know, very appropriate phrase, open kimono.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Without the open kimono, without discussion about what the hell is going on here, who's got the ownership of this, right? Because the commandant's going to be gone in 3 years. Where's all these young junior officers who are fired up about this shit like we were once fired up about maneuver warfare? Right. You know? I mean, that shit, getting in fist fights with guys over whether you can shoot machine guns from a reverse slope effectively. I mean, I remember that shit. You get into fights over this shit.
Or whether you would ever defend from the reverse slope.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, you're investing some time and energy in trying to get yourself up to speed as an institution. We've always been an institution that prides itself on having leaders at the junior level you know, we pride ourselves on taking good first term enlisted dudes and giving them all the responsibility they can handle, but we're not fulfilling our own ethos here and how introducing this force.
General Lejeune hung the whole fucking future of the Marine Corps after World War One on this drunken fucking lieutenant colonel named Ellis, you know, and his maneuver warfare fucking dribblings. And the guy was smart, but he was, you know, I mean, he was definitely, you know, not somebody you'd want to, you know, but he made sense. And it, you know, worked out for us. It was very prescient about what was going to happen.
You know, but did they, was that this widely debated? Was that General Lejeune being, you know, following his instinct as a commandant, and is General Berger following in his footsteps by following his instincts and not paying attention to the knuckle dragging rabble that can't intellectually comprehend?
You know, that's a good point, Matt.
Comprehend the. Let me tell you, I remember here, you know, reading about the reverse slope defense, and I just remember when I was a lieutenant, I was like, why would you ever be on a reverse slope, right? And then I heard Mike Wiley talking about it. Now, let me just tell you this. It's important who the messenger is, because, you know, I know Mike Wiley now. I haven't seen him in a number of years, but I got to know him well. He's a smart, smart guy.
Fuck yeah, okay? He was.
But Colonel Wiley was kind of a weird dude.
Yeah, he was.
He talked like this. I'm Mike Wiley, and you just have to. Right?
I don't worry. I don't have AIDS. Remember
right. And so he would say that, and you'd be sitting there like, okay. And so it was like, okay, well, it. And then he talks about getting your ass blown off on the forward slope. And he starts giving, but I'm still skeptical. And then the burning bush shows up, right? Tony Zinni comes in and he talks about, and I talk to Mike, and the quote, I can quote the video. And I talk to Mike Wiley, and I'm wondering why the hell I'd be on the front side of this son of a bitch if I could be on the back side. I could still have interlocking fields of fire, but he can't hammer my ass on the forward slope because he's got artillery. And he's not going to be able to get me with his mortars till he closes with me. And when he closes with me, I'll whack him. And I'm thinking, man. You know, he just pried my stupid ass brain open there. And so to me, that's the point of the point of the point, which is this intellectual combat we tend to do in the Marine Corps about stuff is not very apparent here.
Well, you know, it makes me nervous. You're right. You're absolutely right. I remember that because I was a sergeant when those guys started coming out of the basic school who are in the mid 70s, the first guys to come out of IOC, and they're like, we're not going to just, and then, when I first got to 3-5, the idea was you line up when you get to like a certain point before you took the hill, and you got online, you walked over the top of the hill. And they're like, right. This is, and the lieutenants are arguing with the captain, sir, this is bullshit. You know, Major Smith and Major Zinni, you know, they're saying, oh no, you got to crawl on the top of this thing. I didn't hear Zinni's name, but I heard Smith's name. I didn't know who the fuck he was then. But he was an instructor at TBS, and they're pushing that shit. And the guys who really got it were the guys who the first guys who worked the first IOC classes to go underneath Vic Taylor, because Vic Taylor is one of those guys too. Oh, no, you ain't going to be running around on top of this fucking hill. You're going to be crawling around on top of this hill and find a place to, you know, for cover. And, you know, the reverse slope is where you kill people.
But again, I can tell you that when I went to the basic school as an instructor in 1989, in March of 19, I can remember.
Still doing that.
Still
shit.
Doing that on range.
Yeah,
still doing that on range 11. Remember, you know, we do the flanking attack. We come up that fucking steep fucking hillside out of that creek. You get online, you do fire movement, and then somebody blows a whistle and everybody stands up, right? When the right foot, when the left foot hits the deck, the right hand pulls the trigger.
Yeah, right.
Right? That's right. That was it.
And I remember only four guys left alive. That would have been fine.
Well, but they consolidate and the gunny comes up and gives us chow and water. And right, I'm ready for Vietnam, as General Zinni would say. And then, you know, and I remember asking General Zinni once, because I got every version of the 6-5, and I found out what year that thing all of a sudden gets inserted. The assault fire technique, it was called, and it got inserted when Zinni was at the basic school, and so he was in Stuttgart. And I called him and I said, hey, could I ask you some questions about that? He said, yeah. So he starts telling me the story of how these guys slipped it into the 6-5. And I said, hey, sir, what happens if there's a machine gun that's on a hilltop that you're not attacking that can hit you? He goes, what happens? He said, everybody gets killed. That's what happens. Yeah. And he said, that's why you don't do it. I said, okay.
But I had some guys who've been in a lot of combat tell me they did do that assault fire technique sometimes, but not when you're it was like when you knew you were fighting, it was like the type of shit that happened in the Anwa Basin, not the type of shit that happened up there in the DMZ. When you're fighting these fucking pissy little actions where there's like three or four guys shooting at you from a hilltop and they're, you know, they're pursuing these fuckers and they pin them down by a, you know, it was very situationally dependent.
Well,
you
know, and I mean, again, like, without let me just say, most of the first part of my life, I never looked at a fucking footnote. Then I found out it's all in the fucking footnotes, right? So without that, you know, again, hating techniques is inappropriate. It's the misapplication of a technique into a situation that it doesn't belong, that as Jeff describes it, I can see that. We're hunting these guys. They're the prey. There is no other machine gun. We know that because we've been fighting these assholes for how long? It's not the way they do it. Okay? And now I can – okay, so I can see that, right? But without the footnotes, I mean, it's just stupid. So to me, that's my number one concern is – the intellectual vigor of the wider organization. And now the question is, General Berger, General Lejeune, and maybe he didn't talk to anybody either, and it was just like, I know which direction. It's got to be amphibious warfare. That's going to be the future. I can see us fighting in the Pacific against Japan, blah, 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 blah. You know. And so I've always, and I'll throw this out, if you do something, right, I won't call it clairvoyant, but if you do something that nobody else is doing, you're one of two things. You're a genius or you're an idiot.
You're an idiot. Yes. And, you know.
One of the two.
Yeah.
And, and history will decide because the great example is the Maginot Line. Yeah. Warfare transformed. We're going to protect France like France has never been protected before. We have the Maginot Line. We got trains in that son of a fucking bitch. The crowds are never going to come here. You know, we have grid squares and we have artillery pieces and we have the most robust military in the world and we can fill every one of these little grid squares and annihilate it. Right?
And twice as many tanks as the German had.
Right.
Better tanks.
Right. First situation report.
Where are the Germans? I think
they are going around us. What? Yes, they're going. They are going. Bring my horse.
hey, you know what? No, Mac. Speaking of Vietnam, though, after Vietnam, we had a commandant who single-handedly wanted to make a big change. That was Chapman, right? And Chapman's thing was to get all the riffraff out of the Marine Corps. We're going to go back to being Marines. I don't think he made a big effort to announce this to the Corps, but he didn't have to. That was one of those things where everybody was like, oh, right on. Let's do this.
That was Wilson, man. That was Wilson who did that, General Wilson.
Hold on, dude. It's Chapman on account of the fact that Malcolm Gladwell did a podcast on it, so don't even start with the.
I don't know. I heard that and I questioned Gladwell's footnote.
I thought it was Wilson too. To tell you the truth, it was Chapman.
We will have to investigate. But again, you're talking about the same thing. Who was I talking to? Who was I talking to and interviewing that said when Barrow went to the all volunteer force, right?
No, that wasn't Barrow. That was Cushman.
Yeah.
Cushman.
Yeah.
General Cushman was the commandant before General Wilson. He was deputy of the CIA and then he became commandant.
And then after they screwed it all up, I believe it was Wilson was the one that started recognizing we needed to professionally train recruiters. Because that first attempt at the all-volunteer force.
Well, Wilson concentrated on the drill field and then Barrow fucking really leaned in on recruiters, man.
My point, whoever did it, is this that was the point they made to me was it was widely believed that it would ruin the Marine Corps, right? Going to the all volunteer force was going to destroy the Marine Corps.
Yeah, it did hurt for sure.
Yeah, there was a quote unquote period of adjustment, and then the Marine Corps lived to see. So the question is, you know, if this is General Berger, right? Does he see something that his peers do not see and is therefore going to be a transformational commandant? Or is this the mistake of evolution of warfare being being mistaken for transformational warfare and us and the Marine Corps being positioned on the Maginot Line?
Yeah, we're confusing things here because the all-volunteer force wasn't either a strategic, operational, or tactical move. It was a political move to kind of try and solve the pain of all the draft dodging and the draft.
Okay, I don't want to go into. I don't. Like no matter so what the mistake
different.
Was. Right.
I know. I
okay.
know what you're saying, but I'm saying it's different. This is an operational. This is a strategic decision that the commandant's made, and so we're assuming based on the fact that the commandant is subject to UCMJ like every other Marine Corps officer is, that he's taken his direction from his higher authority, which is no shit, the National Command Authority, through the Joint Chiefs of Staff, through the chairman. So that being said, the big question is, what is the national strategy? Because as you said, Mac, we haven't been told that yet. It's classified.
So is this a small piece of a larger DOD adjustment in the national defense strategy?
Well, I know General Berger personally, and I hope that it is. Otherwise,
You know him personally? Really?
Well, yeah, I know. I mean, the guy, I worked for the guy twice. Once, okay. Through the RCT command in Afghanistan, but then every week I was talking to the guy, sometimes two or three times, and he'd come out and watch the advisor training groups.
I know him personally too, okay, just for the record. Yeah. He NJP'd me. Yes. So I think your relationship is bullshit, right? Yeah. You don't really know somebody till they NJP you. Then you fucking know him.
Really? I've never been NJP'd though, so I guess I don't know anything.
Well, that means you're not really a Marine then, okay?
Yeah. I guess you're right, man.
All those years. All those years. Because you know what? You talk to enlisted Marines, what do they say?
But most of them never been NJP'd either. There's nothing more full of shit than enlisted Marines.
Oh, shit.
I know, because I was, even though I never got NJP'd, I was one for almost 12 years.
And so, you 12 years. You had 12 years of, well, wait a minute. First of all.
Let me put it this way. I should have been NJP'd.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say that. It's not like you should have been NJP'd. You just never were.
I should have been NJP'd yesterday.
Is this a small piece of a larger DOD adjustment in the national defense strategy? If it is, we have no indication that the whole national defense strategy has shifted. And since it's classified, we probably shouldn't. But you would think that somebody would leak it. How about this? How about another concern? And that is this. Are we losing the close with and destroy part of the Marine Corps mission? And we are going to become, guardians of coastal artillery batteries.
That is the big danger.
Yeah, it is. Because it sure seems like the close with and destroy isn't going to be the primary mission anymore when you're giving away the assets that enable you to do it.
We are giving up the birthright of the stand the fuck by tribe if we don't fucking keep that close with and destroy, that Marine Rifle Squad mission, man, by fire and close combat. That's us. Yeah. And nothing but.
And it's not just, let me caveat that with this. Okay, as long as it's not too heavy a fight, we can get in there and we can do that shit.
No caveats to close with and destroy.
Hold on, I got my X-Acto knife out. But if they've got some heavy-duty shit there, we can't play. Right? That's not...
Unless it's dangerous. We close with and destroy unless it's dangerous. Yeah.
That's not Marine. That's not the way. That's not ever something that's been said. It's like, where do you want us to go? What do you want us to do? And we got the ass to go fucking do this shit.
Yeah.
But it's not like
very assertive as long as that's okay with you.
Yeah. Is there any chance there's any armor there? Because you know what? Yeah. Fucking tanks, man, we're not so good with anymore. Yeah. Unless the army can give us some, Colonel. Hey, fuck off, man. We ain't giving you shit, okay? Appreciate
Call
that.
Call the anti-tank drone.
Yeah. Make sure you have your Carl Gustavs lubed up.
Yeah, right.
So is that, I mean, Is that part of it? I mean, we all know how the whole coastal artillery battery worked out in the Philippines, right? In World War II, it got those guys
on Wake Island.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. If you're giving up infantrymen and you're giving up tanks and you're giving up a tubed artillery, what lesson can you draw?
Yeah.
What can you draw? I mean, that pretty much tells you what the new vision is, and I'm not comfortable with it.
I'm a big fan.
Can't figure out why they didn't do a better job of selling this to the force, for crying out loud.
I'm a big fan of being able to smash somebody. Oh, you need me to create a flank? How about if I smash one right through his head? That'll work.
Yeah, right.
All right, let's go. Smash it right through his head. And so
yeah, you're right. That's the big thing.
Yeah, that and losing an infantry worth of shooters to me.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. That's the Marine Corps smaller than I've ever seen it in my lifetime. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, how many times you got to learn the same lesson? I mean, they did the same bullshit, you know, just recently, and by 202K, right?
Right.
We got 1.9 and 2.9 and 3.9 back, you know.
They all came back.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let me tell you, I just wanted to kind of do some framing in terms of, you know, footnotes we don't have and discussions we will have. And so there's some smart people, Mark Cancion, Colonel, you know, who's now at CSIS. He's written about this, and he's going to come on. I think he has a piece coming out tomorrow, and he's going to come on tomorrow. T.X. Hamas, a former – I met him when he was a captain. He was Weapons Company 1-5.
Yeah.
When I was a second Lieutenant McNamara rolling around Charlie Company.
He was a writer, man, even then.
Oh, my God. He was the smartest, right? He was the smartest dude. And his lieutenants loved working for him. A guy named Mike Lambiez and Mike Primo. And Weapons Company was the place to be because Captain Hamas was – I mean, he taught him. And they were just – I mean, and back in – you know, that was 1984, 1985 – We didn't do so much, right? And I mean, because here's what I got taught at IOC. Hey, Lieutenant, when I want you to think, you'll see me with my pants around my ankles, waving my hands over my head. Okay, until you fucking see that, you do what fuck,
Logston.
You do what the fuck I tell you to, and that's the way this shit works, right? How to be successful in the Fleet Marine Force? Know what your commanding officer wants and give it to him.
Yeah,
that's
a general. That's a Victor Krulak phrase right there. That's from First to Fight. Find out what the boss wants and gives it to him. Give it to him.
That was
it. It's also the motto of Reinhard Heydrich, head of the SS, and the guy who. I'm just saying. You know.
All right. Final thoughts, Timmy.
No. Nope. I'm not. I'm not happy. We've been saying from the very beginning. I'm not happy seeing us. And take any deviation away from being the nation's 911 force, because that's what we're organized to do.
Got it. Jeff, final thought?
Yes, I have a thought about this. Number one, there's a dearth of Marine veterans in the Senate and in the House of Representatives now. However, they have a lot of mouthy constituents. And I think the gap between when this comes out and when it goes up on the floor of Congress, there may be a lot of letters flying to these guys, and we might see some reaction from some of the people in Congress when this thing hits the legislative branch.
Interesting. Well, no, and that's going to be because they already told the Navy when the Navy advertised that, we don't want to buy this sub and we don't want to buy this ship.
Well, like you said, Mac, Ohio, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, all of a sudden you're going to not buy tanks. You're going to not buy Ospreys. You're going to not buy F-35s. All things in this plan. And is the American, you know, are the Congress people that have approved those programs and that the Marine Corps said we'd buy this many versions of it? Are they going to be okay with that? Or are they going to say, wait a minute, like what is going on here? And the other thing is my concern is, you know, and we didn't really talk about this was. And Jeff kind of started to in terms of the difference between the South China Sea and the Korean Peninsula. But the Marine Corps is on the hook to supply forces in a whole in op plans of war plans around the world.
Right.
Where do the forces, when we say, okay, those three tank battalions that we used to have, we don't have them anymore. Okay, so where do they come from? The Army? Do you have to stand those up now?
No shit.
Where do they come from? And so, to me, you know, that's got to be something that we see, and Congress obviously going to have a say in it. So, I think, again, I talked about the first part of my life, I never really looked at a footnote, and now to me it's the most.
It's all, yeah.
Yeah, it's the most important.
Unless they put us on the border, man. Break out those Appaloosas and those campaign covers and get ready to fucking do some cavalry.
Well, we're going to build the Maginot Line.
Oh, how fun would that
we're
be?
We're going to build the Maginot Line down there, boys. That ain't there.
It'll be named different. It'll be the.
It's all going to be different.
The Pelosi line.
It's gonna be different. It's gonna be great, and it's gonna be beautiful, and it's gonna be cheap. All right. Well, let me just tell everybody. If you're listening to this, you're probably concerned, and we're gonna get anybody that will come on to talk about this. We're gonna get on to talk about this because one thing I think all of us have experienced in our lives as Marine officers. And Jeff is Marine enlisted, is this. We don't shy away from, spirited discussions. We certainly don't shy away from the truth. And we've all lived our lives, being faithful to that. And so to me, what's interesting is, how does whoever see the transformation of war, how does this make sense for the best Swiss Army knife, right, that's ever walked the planet? And that keeps the capabilities of the Swiss Army knife so that it is this jewel, that belongs to the American people, and it doesn't reduce the effectiveness of that Swiss Army knife.
That's right.
And to me,
brown side out, green side in.
Right. And to me, that's really important. So anyway, thanks, guys. I appreciate the visit today.
No worries, Matt. Glad to be here. Thanks.
All right. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.